Welcome, everyone. It's great to see all of you again. Thanks for coming out. So I begin by thanking our sponsors, Rachel and Akiva Romanoff, who will be listening on recording. So thank you, Akiva. In memory of Akiva's father, Avram, David, Nathan, Ben Arav, Gershon, Rafael, A. David Romanoff, Zichron Lebracha, and by Rona and Jeff Rubin. In memory of Jeff's mother, Leah Rachel by Yitzchak, Zichrona Lebracha. Okay, we'll just briefly review what we did last week and review one a very important analogy, which you may predict which one it is. And then we're going to get back to business on Perek Yud Zayin. We see at the beginning of Perek Yud Zayin, Eliyahu Navi comes along and he stops the rain. We have no background to Eliyahu. We don't know who this man is. In fact, the only descriptions really have of him are not very helpful. We don't really know what tribe he's from. We don't really know what Tishbi is. And Eliyahu goes to Achav at this very terrible point in Jewish history where the entire Malchut Yisrael, the northern kingdom, not the Malchut Yehuda, the one of David and Shlomo, this group is serving the Avodah Zarah, Baal. Baal is the god of storms, the god of rain. So Eliyahu comes along, and what he does is, he says, this is source number one on the source sheet, Vayomer Eliyahu atishvimi toshaveha gilad el achav, chai Hashem Elokei Yisrael, the Lord of Israel shall live, asher marti lefanav, who I stand before him, and then, im yeh hashanim ha'ele talu matar, ki im lefi edvari, that there should not be any rain or dew these years, except for at my word. And this, by the way, lasts years until they actually start having rainfall again. Now, the question that Mefarshim debated was, did Eliyahu HaNavi go and make this decree on his own, or was he prompted by God to do so? What seems to be, at the very least, is that an indication that it's not a standard, Vayomer Hashem El Eliyahu, we don't have that at the very least. The way it's presented is we don't have a clear command. And beyond that, that notion of ki im lefi divari, except for at my word, it sounds very Eliyahu-centric. And so there is a debate amongst the Mefarshim about this. Now, the next question that we had to raise was, well, how are we supposed to look at Eliyahu if this is the case? And the way Perek Yud Zayin breaks down, and it's actually the same way Perek Yud Chet is going to break down, is that there's a command, or there's some sort of decree, and then there are three stories. So the first story was Eliyahu HaNavi going to hide out in Nachal Kerit, the Wadi of Kerit. Kerit, Karet, being cut off. Eliyahu HaNavi goes there, and the ravens are coming, and they're feeding him. And then eventually it dries up. And the question is how to sort of look at these different stories. So one approach, which is the approach of Professor Uriel Simon, it's mentioned in Rabbi Alex Israel's book, and I'm happy to share the articles with you if you want to take a look at it more extensively. But the first approach is that this is really Eliyahu HaNavi is doing a positive thing here. Maybe Hashem prompted him to do this. And this is all a training exercise for him before he goes and has the big showdown with Ahab. That's one approach. The second approach was a much more negative one, which said that Eliyahu HaNavi here is being way too cruel. And that's what the ravens symbolize. Eliyahu HaNavi here is being very harsh on the people. He's being too much of a zealot and not having, let's say, the Midas HaRachamim coupled with the Midas HaDin. And that's the issue Eliyahu HaNavi is struggling with there. He's being too cruel to his people. Yes, when they do Avodah Zarah, Hashem is going to, they get in trouble. And as we say in the second paragraph of Shema, but at the same time, you also have to have love and compassion for your people. And as you're going to see shortly, this is a very harsh decree against them. And the final view, which is the view of Amnon Bazak, and don't worry, we'll review these in the course of this year, is that the problem here isn't so much the cruelty. The problem really is here is that he's not attributing it enough to God. A ki im lefi divari, except for at my word, because it makes it about Eliyahu HaNavi, that he's the one in charge. He's the sort of the head honcho. Where, of course, all power and all control in this world is that of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, is that of God's. And so Rabbi Zak's argument is that there's a problem here in that it's not explicit enough that this is coming from God. Good, that was the background, that's what we're up to for this week. I always feel like when you review after a shiur, you do it in 3 minutes. It's like, why did you go to the whole 45-minute shiur the previous week? You just do it in 3 minutes. Okay. Now, I want to review one analogy because it's going to be really important for us over the course of this year. And this is the presidential diet analogy. Yes, please. Ah, so we'll see how that plays out here in the course of this parak. I mean, he gets cut off here. The water runs out. He's now suffering, and he has to go run somewhere else. So maybe that's a type of punishment. Maybe it's also a type of education. But we're going to see how that plays out. Okay, here's the analogy. It's going to be very important. I mentioned this last week, but for those who don't remember, presidential diet analogy. I go to Mr. Chava Casper, doctor Chava Casper, and I go to her. And I go to Dr. Chava Casper, and I say, write a paper for me on American history, 1900 to 2000, on presidential history. And she comes back, with a paper that discusses JFK's dietary preferences, what he liked to eat for brunch, talks about FDR's dinner choices. So what would you give her? You give her an F. Terrible grade. Horrible, horrible paper. But if the assignment was to write a paper on presidential dietary preferences from 1900 to 2000, get an A+. What's the difference? It's all about what the purpose of the book, of the paper, is all about. And what that impacts is every single editorial choice made in that book. So what are you going to put in and what are you not going to put in? What information is pertinent and what's not? How are you going to present it? How much are you going to emphasize? What language are you going to use? So on and so forth. All this is going to be impacted by what the goal, what the purpose of the book is. And that's why with Navi, it's so important to keep that in mind. Because what's the difference? You know, the Torah, God, you know, dictated it. But Navi, what's the difference between me writing it or Navi writing it? Because every single one of these editorial choices is prophetically inspired. Asher b'char ben v'im tovim. And so when we look at these prakim, we have that issue is going to come up, which is why exactly is it being presented this way, and why is this relevant? That issue is going to be very relevant for us tonight. Okay. So we reviewed the first story. Now we are on the second story in Perek Yud Zayin. Okay. And the second story here starts on Pasuk Chet, which you have on page 854. You have it in English on the left side if you would like. Okay. So here's what happens. Eliyahu Navi, Vayi Devar Hashem, Elav Leimor. Hashem says to Eliyahu, Kum Leich Tzarfata Asher Letzidon V'yashavta Sham. So Hashem says to him, go to Tzarfata, and what's going to happen? Hinei Tziviti Sham Isha Amana L'Chalkalecha. I'm going, you're going to go there, and I've commanded a woman there to sustain you. Okay, because he's out of food. He's got no water, he's got no food left. Okay. So then Eliyahu Navi goes to Tzarfata, V'yakam V'yelech Tzarfata, he goes there. So there's a widow gathering wood. Okay, sad situation. And he calls out to her, and he says, please put some water in my vessel, and I will drink. Does this remind you of anybody? Right. So, Parshas Chayisara. What happens? They basically have this whole test. So it's a very similar setup. Right? So that's the whole story in Chayisara. So if I'm trying to set it up this way, what's going to happen next? This big act of chesed, right? We're ready to go for it. And now what happens? Not that, because what's going on? So he says, she says to him, Batomar Chai Hashem Elokecha Im Yeshli Ma'og Ki Imelok Kav Chemach Bakad. She says, I don't even have anything. I don't have anything to give you. I don't have a cookie to give you. All I have is a little flour in a jug. Uma'at Shemen B'tzapacha, so got a little oil. Okay? V'hinini M'kosheshet Shinayim Eitzim. I'm basically gathering two pieces of wood. Uvati vasisuhu liv livni vachalnuhu vamatnu. What's about to happen? They're gathering their last pieces of wood so she can make this final meal with the little last ounces, morsels of flour and oil that she has. And what's going to happen? Then they'll eat that meal. They realize it's done. They've got nothing left. They're about to die. So Eliyahu HaNavi then basically performs the Hanukkah miracle, which is, and this is an important formulation, it says, Vayomre Eleha Eliyahu, this is Pasuk Yagimel, Eliyahu says to her, Al Tiri, don't be afraid, Bowi Asichid Varech, go and do as you're planning on doing. Ach Asili Misham Uga Kitana Varishona, but feed me first. So basically, make your little cakes, but feed me first. Vosesili Valafu Livnech Tasi Barchona, so give me first and you'll have afterwards. And then Pasuk Yadal, a very important formulation, Kicho Amar Hashem Lokei Israel, because this is what Hashem Elokei Yisrael said, Kara kemach lo tichla, v'tzapachas Hashem en lo techsar, ad yom teith Hashem geshem al panei ha'adama. Very important line. He says, don't worry. Because Hashem said, the jug of flour shall not run out and the flask of oil shall not lack until the day that Hashem provides rain upon the face of the earth. And And behold, what happens? In the next pasuk, she does like Eliyahu says, and they have food like he had described to her, and this miracle that the flour does never ceases and the oil never runs out, just like Kedvar Hashem Asher Diber Biyad Eliyahu, just like this Hashem had said to Eliyahu. Okay, not to Eliyahu, Alan.
I don't recall ever a
story. Ah, so Kedvar Hashem Asher Diber Biyad Eliyahu. So the formulation here is in accordance with the word of Hashem, which he had spoken through Eliyahu, Diber Biyad Eliyahu. So here it's implicit, it's seemingly. Right, so it's in a contrast to before. So here we have already, you're picking up on something, that there's some greater connection to God being involved here. Yeah, Aaron. Right. So it's a little, people have picked up on it. It's like a little ironic that he's going. And so maybe you're saying maybe that indicates that he's not necessarily learning the lesson so immediately. But if we just take a step back, the first approach, you know, this is all about training him to be able to educate people about God and miracles. That's important. But I want to focus on the second and third, okay? The second one here, I think, flows very easily. But just think about this story. He's this religious zealot who goes and is acting in a way that's sort of cruel to the people. It's too much midas hadin, strict justice. And so first story is teaching about the cruelty of the rave with the ravens, and then the water's going to dry up, so now he can experience a little bit of that pain. So now he's experienced it a little bit, and then what's the next way to hit him in the kishkas? So you send him somewhere else. Yeah, Brett?
Yeah, you see someone's heart.
Right, you see in this very sort of depressing and poignant scene where this literally they're having their last meal. So Eliyahu HaNavi goes and he sees the desperation firsthand. Right, God is saying, go here, see, experience that desperation of what it happens to people when you have a decree where they don't have water. And this poor widow, right? Play up this poor widow. She's about to die, her son's about to die because they have no. And so what's God doing here? It's reminding him, right, that you're forced to see the pain. He has to see the pain of what's going on, experience it, understand it. And here, I think this is that's the goal of the story, right? That's the goal. According to that view, that's the goal of the story. The point is, Eliyahu HaNavi, see what's happening as a result of it. Then he starts building some sensitivity in terms of trying to deal with it. Okay, so that's. I think we have a fair. Yeah, Brett. Right, very good. He's
right.
Seeing.
For Eliyahu to believe in God because he can do miracles. She doesn't know that he can do miracles. Like, she doesn't know that this.
Very good. So, Brett, that's an important point as well. That this, in this story here, we see somebody who's willing to sort of take a leap of faith, and that maybe that's also part of the training process. And if, and I think that might link back to this parallel to Rivka, but the idea, what's going on with Rivka? I mean, this woman could have been like Rivka had she had anything to give, right? And maybe there's some parallel that this actually is a decent decent person. I like that very much. Okay, but the third view was the one of Rav Bazak, that he's not giving enough credit to God. What happens in this story? So here, when he makes this decree, as Alan picked up on, he tells her, this is going to be, it's Nespach HaShemen, basically. According to who is it being done? Not ki im lefi divari, not at my word. Pasuk says, Ko amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael. How different is that? Hashem Elokei Yisrael said that this is what's going to happen. It's not ki im lefi divari, except for at my word. So already here, we're seeing in this story, this sort of transition, this educational experience for Eliyahu, of either the cruelty, and now you're seeing the cruelty firsthand, or beyond that, Eliyahu HaNavi is experiencing, or is trying to be trained. Here's a, you know, one experience. Are you going to attribute this to God or not? And right here, in this next miracle, you see quite a contrast already with the first pasuk.
Even more so,
yeah.
He sort of changes the formulation of Hashem by saying, you know, Hashem says,
right.
Until Hashem
Right.
Changing.
Adyom Tate Hashem Geshem. Yeah, already here you see that emphasis being changed. Yeah, excellent point. Good. Any other comments? Yeah, please. Right. It's important that when the rain comes back, it's clear it's coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and not this other god of storms, right? Right, and not him. Right, they're open to other possibilities as to who could be bringing the rain, and once you have that, you really need to emphasize it's actually God. Yeah, I agree.
I was also thinking that it's interesting if this vehicle is a widow and orphan, you know, we're told a lot about the need to take care of, and if you're talking about a situation that should also, you know, send a message.
Right, evoke compassion, prompt care. And that's what I was trying to allude to at the beginning. It's this very sort of devastating, depressing story. You know, and like if there's anybody to care about and to feel badly for, it's these individuals. Okay, good. Now we have the last story, the Perek. And this story is remarkable. Then we're going to look at, we're going to get to Perek Yudchet. So what happens in the next story? Unfortunately, after this occurs, the year goes by. He's living there for a year. A year goes by. And what occurs? Chala ben ha'isha ba'alat ha'bayit. Ayvei, the son gets sick. V'hayihi chayo chazak ma'od. This Pazigid Zion, his sickness was very intense. Ad asher lo notra bo neshama. Until he had no more breath left in him. What does that mean? He died, right? Now, some people might try to explain it. It doesn't mean he died because then Eliyahu Navi is not doing Techiyas HaMesim. So, but it does, from the way the Pesukim presented to us, at the very least, this is a case of Pikuach Nefesh, and no Trabo, no Shama, sounds like he's dead. And what happens? Vatomer Eliyahu, she goes to Eliyahu Navi and says to him, Ma'ali v'alach ish Elokim, what do I have to do with you, you man of God? Bata Elayla haskir davuni lahamid et b'ni. So you've come here to basically to cause God to remember my sins and to kill my son. Whoa, that's pretty intense, right? She's basically claiming Eliyahu Navi here is responsible for killing her son. Now, it seems to be that what she means, it could be just lashing out, but it also could mean that she thinks he being there sort of brought God's attention to them, and then, you know, once you're in the spotlight, it's like the kid in the classroom. You know, when there's 24 other kids in the room, you know, you can get away with more. When you're the only kid having the spotlight on you, you get into greater trouble. You can't get away with as much. So what happens is this boy dies and he attacks Eliyahu HaNavi. And then what happens? Yomer Eliyahu Tini li et b'neich, give me your son. And he grabs her out of her arm, takes her out of her arms, and he goes up to the attic and he lies him down on the bed. Okay? Lies him down on the bed. And then, two very critical psukim. Okay, and we have to read these psukim closely. So, Pasuk Chav tells us the following. Vayikra al Hashem, he calls out to Hashem, Vayomar, and he says, Hashem Elokai, Hashem my God, Hagam al Almana, Asher Anim et Gorer Ima, also to this, even to this Almana, that I am living with, Hariota lahamid et bina, you've been so wicked to kill her son? Okay. It's a complaint. What happens as a result of this? Well, nothing, because it needs something else to happen. So this is unsuccessful. Vayitmoded al yeled shalosh pa'amim. Vayikra al Hashem vayomar, and then he calls out to Hashem again. Hashem Elokai, Hashem my God, tashev na nefesh hayeled hazeh al kirbo. It's a tefillah. He's calling out to God. Hashem, please give this young boy's soul back. Now, Vayishma and Hashem, Vayishma, Hashem bekol Eliyahu. Now, Hashem is much more involved here. He hears the voice of Eliyahu, and he gives back the soul to this boy. Pasuk Chaf Gimel, and Eliyahu Anavi goes back to the woman. He returns, says, "Ah, see, your son is alive." And last pasuk of the parak, Vatomar Isha Eliyahu. The woman says to Eliyahu, "Ata zayadati ki ish Elokim ata." What does that remind you of? Ata yadati ki. So it's Avram Avinu. It's a very strong praise. Udvar Hashem beficha emet, and the word of Hashem in your mouth is true. So let's go through our models. Okay, let's go through our models. First model here, this is training Eliyahu in a positive way. Eliyahu Navi here is being developed as this leader. So here he's able to enable her to publicize God's name. She realizes it. She picks up on it. Okay? That's one approach. The second approach here I want to point out is actually really important. Source number two. So just look at source number two for 1 second. Vayikra el Hashem vayomar Hashem Elokai Hagam. So what does Hagam mean? And even, meaning everyone else is getting killed, right? But you're even going to kill. So that means things are obviously very awful. And even the Almana Asher Ani Mekorerima, even the Almana who I'm living with. So what does it sound like? Who is this centered around? Right. Ania, the Almana that I'm living with, that you've killed her son. It's very Eliyahu. It's a complaint, Eliyahu Anavi. The second pasuk is quite different. Vayit modeid al hayelet. Now it's a general boy. It's not just about the fact that it's connected to him. And he calls out to Hashem, Hashem Elokai, Tashev na nefesh hayelet azel kirbo. So here you see Eliyahu Navi is a very dramatic shift. One's his complaint related to himself. The other one is his calling out to God in a very proper, meaningful way. And I think what's going on here in this story is that, again, according to the second view, you see, again, how precarious, how awful the situation is going on in Eretz Yisrael. I mean, this boy is teetering on the edge of death. Right? This miracle maybe ends, or he's so on the brink of death. This boy dies. And she accuses him, right, of it. It's this remarkable story. It's quite painful. But you see, Eliyahu Navi, again, he's seeing that it's not just, okay, maybe people are suffering. You see, death is a result of this happening. So what better way to get across to Eliyahu Navi that there's cruelty, you're being too harsh, this is what's happening to your people, than seeing a child die, and the Hagam, and even. So Eliyahu Navi has to transition now, and he has to realize, and this is what he does, that he has having general compassion for this kid. Right? He prays for the kid. He cares about the kid. It's not just about him. He prays for this kid in general. And then what happens? Perek Yilchai, where he gets back into the flow of things. Yes, Yichal.
I've got a question, because I'm not sure about the Nikud, but when it says, Vayikam el Hashem, Vayomer Hashem Elokai?
Yes.
So it's like, is my God.
But I think that's like a personal way. It's
Right, but it's like,
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think we, you know, we'd agree that he has a special connection with Hashem, but it's very strong language, certainly. So I think the second approach flows quite well here, right? This cruelty, he sees it, he's got to act on it and care about the child, and this is all part of his growing process. But what about the third one? I think the third one here is actually unbelievable, right? Because, I mean, maybe the question is, why exactly do you need this story even? But what happens? What happens? She says to him now, Atazei adati ki ish elokim ata. Didn't she call him before ish elokim? So she's saying, now I know you're an ish elokim. But she said that before. What?
You proved yourself.
But she said, of calling ish elokim, but I would say it a little bit differently. Before he's ish elokim, he can make a miracle. But there's a difference between, you know, a sorcerer, a magician, and a navi who makes everyone realize it's dvar Hashem b'ficha emes. The whole drama of this parak is whether Eliyahu Navi will acknowledge and make it clear to the people that it's not about me. Who's it about? Who controls everything? It's about Hashem. Right? Before it's Ki'im Lefi Devari, except for at my word. Who, Ki'im Lefi Devari, do you see the stark shift here? That who is it? Udvar Hashem b'ficha emes. That they recognize it's not from him, it's b'ficha, it's Hashem who's making these miracles. And so you see how there's this transition. Right, that he appears, he emerges as somebody now, Eliyahu Navi, who is, it's clear to him, it's clear to everyone that it's coming from Hashem, it's not just for him anymore. And now, he's had this experience, and he's ready to get back and deal with the next, which is now, well, how do you actually go interact with Bnei Israel now, not isolate anymore? Yes, and then we'll switch to Yichai. Go ahead. Right, that's... Right, she's become much less antagonistic towards him, and yes, right, he's been able to make her acknowledge that God. And but I think for him, the fact that it's not just about believing in him, but it's about believing in God, that here I think, according to Rav Bazak, is the real accomplishment. All right, now we transition to Perek Yud Chet. Here's why we need the presidential diet analogy. So we're going to go through this relatively quickly. We're not rushing through anything, but we'll go through this part relatively quickly. Which is that here you're going to have a story, which I actually still can't fully understand why the Navi presented it this way, but you're going to see there's a huge issue. First pasuk. It's the Hashem goes to Eliyahu, Vayihi Yamim Rabim. It's many days, and Hashem goes to Eliyahu, Dvar Hashem Ayah Eliyahu, Bashanah Shlishi, the third year, Leimor, saying the following. Leich Hera'eh El Achav, who's Achav? The king of Israel. Go to Achav, this sort of wicked king, but he's really influenced by his wife, Yizebel. And I will send rain upon the face of the land. Okay. So now what would you expect to happen? What would you expect? You go meet with Achav and... Okay. I'm going to argue that if you just skip the next 15 psukim and then start with Perek Pasuk Tet Zion, you wouldn't have any issues. There's no issue in the narrative flow. Let me explain what I mean. Okay, and this, by the way, this is the parak that's most famous because this is the Har Carmel episode. But the actual first part of the parak to me is equally as striking. Okay, here's what happens. Eliyahu Navi, Achav. Okay, so then Achav the king says to his servant Ovadiyahu. He says, Ovadiyahu, and very important here. Vayikra Achav el Ovadiyahu. Achav calls out to el Ovadiyahu. Let's call him the chief of staff. Asher al Habayis, who's in charge of the household. Now listen to this formulation. Ovadiyahu haya yareet Hashem. He feared God me'od, greatly. Does it say anybody else was yareet Hashem me'od? Trick question. No, it does not. It doesn't say anybody else. In fact, the Gemara, source number 4, picks up on or how the pasuk in Bereishis is said by Avram Avinu after the Akedah. Atayadati ki yareet Elokim ata. You are a God-fearing man. But the Gemara tells us, source number 5, Amar Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Abba says, Gadol Shenemar Bovadiyahu. The way the Torah describes, the Tanakh describes Bovadiyahu is greater Mimash Shenemar Ba'Avraham. I mean, this man, this prophet Bovadiyahu, is deemed greater than Avraham, at least in the description, because by Avraham Avinu it says, Yerei Elokim Ata. It does not say, Yerei Elokim Ba'od Ata. So now we're meeting this man Bovadiyahu, and we are, whoa, this guy is going to be impressive. Yes. Yeah, there's a lot to say about that. I don't have precise ways of applying that here, but that's a very interesting point. That's very interesting point. If you have any thoughts, I'd be curious to hear them. Okay. Yeah. 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 Yes, great parallel. Yeah, you have also it's very striking. It's a lot of parallels we're picking up on with the Kedah, with Rivka, with Avram. Seems to be a lot of interweaving parts here. Yirmiyahu. So now we're ready to meet Ovadiyahu, and here this remarkable figure emerges. Pasuk Dal. You probably never heard anybody hear of Ovadiyahu before tonight. Okay, good. So I'll be able to teach somebody, a few of you guys something. That's good. All right. So Pasuk Dal. Vayhi b'hachrit Yizebel nevei Hashem. So Yizebel, who her name translates into what she is, she's dung, she's trash. She's the wife of Achav. She's horrible. She basically destroys, Achav as a ruler and leads Bnei Israel in a horrible direction. But what happens? So she basically goes and kills the prophets. She goes out trying to rampage, killing all the prophets. Vayikach Ovadiyahu mea neviim. Ovadiyahu does the following. He takes 100 prophets. Vayachbiim chamishim ish v'ma'ara v'chil kalam lechem v'mayim. So what does he do? He basically splits them up 50 to a cave. V'chil kalam lechem v'mayim. Okay? And he supports them. He sustains them with bread and water. Okay, keep that in mind. Now, Vayomer Achav el Ovadiyahu. Achav says to Ovadiyahu, go out and spread it out throughout the land. Let's go and try to, find a little bit of water, something to keep the horses alive. Basically, they want to keep at least a little bit of, they have nothing. And it's remarkable that the king himself has to do it. That's how desperate things are at this point. And then they split up the land, and Achav goes, Bederech HaLevado, Vajahu goes in the other direction alone. And here we get to Pasuk Zion. Okay, please look inside for this. This is really Kedai. Vahiyo Vajahu Badara, Badarech, Vajahu is on the path. Vihine Eliyahu Likrato. And all of a sudden, Eliyahu is in front of him. How perfect is this, right? This is Eliyahu's whole essence, right? He always just shows up on the scene dramatically. And now all of a sudden, Eliyahu Navi is here. Vayakirehu, Vayipola Panav, he recognizes him. And he falls on his face towards Eliyahu, meaning a sign of respect. Vayomer ha'taze Adoni Eliyahu. Is this you, my master Eliyahu? So what's he showing him? Tremendous reverence and respect. Now it's fascinating that Ovadjahu is working in the kingdom here. Okay? Fascinating. And Eliyahu Hanavi's response, we're going to focus on this. Eliyahu Hanavi's response is the following. Vayomer lo ani. Yeah, it's me. Lech emor la'adonecha. Go say to your master, Hine Eliyahu. Eliyahu is here. Okay, that's a very important formulation. Okay, so he says, go to your master, tell Eliyahu. Tell him. And then Avadiyahu responds to him and says, Vayomer machatasi, what's been my sin? Ki ata notenet avdecha biyad achav lamiseni. What have I done to you that you're going to basically put me in the hands of Achav to kill me? Why? Because what's going to occur? So everybody's been going out from the entire world to try to find you, and they have not been able to. Pasuk Yedaled. And you've told me to go to my master to say Eliyahu is here. And what's going to happen? I'm going to go. And you know what you're going to do? You're going to turn around and make a run for it. God's spirit will take you to somewhere. We have no idea where you are. I'm going to tell Achav, you're not going to find me. And he will kill me. And your servant Ovadjahu, I've been a God-fearing man my whole life. Why are you doing this to me? Very profound, very provocative. So now this beautiful plea to Eliyahu Hanavi, he says, "Hello, who God laduni? Eid Asher Asizi Barogi Zevels Nivei Hashem. Haven't you heard what I did with the all the prophets that Ezevel is trying to kill, and I hid them in a cave." And I supported them with lechem and mayim. We're going to analyze all this. And he said, so he makes it again. Now you're telling me to go to him and tell him I'm not going to be killed. And Eliyahu says the following. Because I will appear to Achav. Don't worry, I'm not going to run away. How do you think Eliyahu and Avi responds to Achav here, to Ovadjahu here? Respectfully? Unclear, right? Makes this whole dramatic plea. Yeah, so I'm going to give in. Yeah, but is he here? Vajo makes this whole plea like you're treating me terribly. This is going to be awful for me. And he doesn't really respond to Ovadia directly about that.
Well, but he says, but Ovadia says they won't be able to find you, and therefore they'll kill me.
Yeah, Right, so you could say he's responding to his claim. So I think there's a little bit of debate about that. But here's the point I want to try to make and develop with you throughout the rest of this year. Or we'll start with this. And then he goes to Achav, and there's this whole background. Okay. If you didn't have the story, would you have any problems? No. Right. I mean, I'm sure when, Yosef and Moshe, when they go have set up meetings with the kings, right? What do they do? They probably have to have, there's probably a secretary, there's probably somebody, the servants. You have to, there's probably some system. Does the Torah tell us about that? No, right?
He knew about Esther and how afraid he was to go to the king.
Absolutely. But do I hear about the conversations with the servants about that process? Nothing. And I'll tell you, by the way, with Achav, there's four psukim about his actual conversation with Achav, and there's 10 psukim about his conversation with the servant of Achav. It's really remarkable. Right? I mean, if I was writing this book, this wouldn't be in here. What do I need this conversation for? So that's the question we have to deal with. Which is that for some reason, Yirmiyahu felt it was so important to put in this conversation between the chief of staff of Achav with Eliyahu HaNavi. What's going on here? Why do we have this in the story? And that's what we're going to try to figure out over the course of the rest of this year. But I want to try to develop the following, okay? Which is, it seems to be that there's actually tremendous tension between Eliyahu and Obadiahu here. What do I mean? So if you look at the Psukim, it's almost very clear. But if you look at the Psukim, and you can look on your source sheet, I sort of bolded this. So Obadiahu treats him extremely respectfully, no question about it. He gets Obadiahu, this is in the bottom of the first page. He says, "Ha'ata ze aduni Eliyahu. Is this you, my master Eliyahu?" Okay? What's Eliyahu's response? Vayomer lo, he says to him, Ani lech emor ladonecha. You go tell your master. What does that mean? I'm not your master. You're working with Achav. How dare you call me your master? I'm not your master. Go to that idol-worshipping king of yours. You call him your master. Whoa. That's a very sharp response. You see how it's being played in a literary way. Now, continue. So he again and again is sort of pleading. Adoni sham he says, he's focusing on this line. But there's a certain tension that Eliyahu Navi here never fully seems to recognize. He never fully seems to recognize or give credence to Obadiahu. Obadiahu is paying him tremendous respect. Obadiahu is being described, Yerei Hashem Ma'od. Does Eliyahu Navi ever show him respect? No. Okay, that's one thing we could pick up on here. Now, I'm not the only one to point this out. Yeah, go ahead.
They both know he's working for the wrong master.
So Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, in one place, when he writes about this, says, you know, it's hard to conceive of how many sleepless and challenging nights Obadiahu had about his decisions. So it's a good point you're picking up on. Excellent, good.
He's definitely a
double agent, and he likely couldn't have done by without working on the inside what he's so successful at.
Right.
100%. So here, yeah, exactly. It's like he's sort of when you're insecure about something, you're sort of projecting. So what I want to do here, yeah. Take a look here at page 2. Unbelievable. Exactly the point I want to make. Excellent. So here's what I want to make. The point I want to make. I don't think I'm overreading this narrative. And then we're going to try to present over the course of the next 10, 15 minutes, three approaches to this. Because really, this is a remarkable story that's here. This doesn't really seem to serve any purpose. They don't refer back to it. It doesn't seem to serve any purpose. It's only because there's something valuable in these 10 psukim that Yirmiyahu decides to preserve it here. We don't hear about Abdi Paro, the stories of them, right, talking to them. Only this. Why is that? I'm going to get you out in just 1 second. But if you look, I wrote actually 3 times subtle jabs on the sheet now. I thought I cut it off incorrectly on page, So I actually wrote it by hand on page 2, but then I already put it already on page 2. So you can see I'm going to try to point out that there are some subtle jabs here, in case that's not clear. Okay. And this is exactly what you were arguing. If you take a look here at the language that's being used, I think it's actually meant to really show a very sharp contrast between these two figures. Look at the chart. It's striking. What happens? When you start up in Nachal Kerit, so Eliyahu Navi goes and is cut off, and he hides in this place, Nachal Kerit. Okay, so Eliyahu Navi, while all this is going on, what's he doing? He's hiding away, he's getting the man, he's cut off, he's separate from Bnei Israel. What happens with Obadiahu? Vayhi b'hachrit izevel. What's happening with that karet? People are getting killed, the prophets, there's like prophet academies, I think elsewhere in Tanakh you have this, they're all getting killed, the Nevi'ei Hashem. And what's going on? So while there's karet with Eliyahu, he's getting cut off, he's separate. What's happening with Ovadyahu when there's karet? He's going and taking action and saving people. Bahachri, both places. Next. Va'arvim lo mevim lo lechem u'basar ba'boker. He's getting bread and meat in the morning. Eliyahu Navi's getting fed by the ravens. You know what's happening while he's sitting there on his private island getting his meat brought by ravens in this miraculous way? You know who's feeding 100 prophets who are hiding in fear in a cave? V'chil kalam lechem v'mayim. So Vajahu saying, you know, Eliyahu Anavi, you're talking all about how you're not giving me any respect. While you were having karet and nachal karet, separate, comfortable there, I'm dealing with Yizevel cutting off, quite literally, you know, she's cutting off Nevi'im's heads. And while you are getting sustained by the ravens and you're having a nice time over there, you know what I'm dealing with? I'm feeding, I'm supporting everybody else. I'm supporting those Nevi'im. So I think here it's painting quite a sharp contrast between the two. It's like you're attacking me, but it goes a step further. I think it goes a step further. And it struck me today. I think I'm Malachim Aleph, underneath the third time I wrote subtle jabs. Pasuk Tet, what does he say to him? He says, he accuses him, numerous times he does this, that you're basically putting me out to be killed. Who else is getting put out by Eliyahu Navi to be killed? Or to die? Everybody, the Jewish people. So you're basically like, you're putting me out to die. Right? It's kind of, and then one more. What's going to happen with Eliyahu Navi? I think this is so strong. What's going to happen? Hashem's basically spirit is going to take you to somewhere we don't know. After you make some whole fancy decree, tell us something's going to happen, and then you, what does that remind you of? What's he jabbing at him for? Well, you know what you did last parak. Yeah, you go, you care so much about Bnei Israel, you're doing so much. Yeah, you make a decree, then you run away and don't deal with anything. Right? Hashem's taking you, you're going to go hide somewhere where no one knows where you are. That's literally what he's saying is you're about to do. Isn't that what Eliyahu Navi just did in the previous parak? That exact thing? That God had basically put him away somewhere in hiding? I think what here about Yahu numerous times is contrasting himself, and it's not just him, meaning Yirmiyahu is doing this. It's contrasting Ovadyahu with Eliyahu as two completely different models. And I want to refer to that. After I built this up, I want to refer to that and present three ideas. Yes, Alan.
I mean,
Yeah. Yeah, I'm doing the hard work. Where are you? Yeah. In Israel, yeah. Oh, first. Interesting. Interesting. So I didn't read it exactly. I read it more. I have to look back at it again. I read it more as he's basically trying to prove his credentials to Eliyahu. But maybe as part of proving his credentials, he's saying, you know, I'm significant. These people are going to die otherwise. But I think the tone is one of he's trying to protect, you know, defend himself here. Interesting. Okay, that, maybe that's another element to throw in here. I'm definitely open to that. Azrael, yeah.
Can't turn away from what Hashem tells him to do, and he has to face the consequences and risk everything to deliver, right? Al Yonah, who tried to run
Right.
Whereas Elijah was like, why are you asking me to do this? I'm not going to be, you're going to have an employee, you're going to run away, and I'm not going to be there.
Interesting.
I'm the Yahweh Hashem, you're the Nabi. Know your role. Why are you sending me to do this?
That's right. It's another way of sort of highlighting that for him. All right, very nice. All right, so let's do three approaches here, okay? With if you'll allow me, in the short minutes that are a few minutes that are remaining, not so short, we have some time. Okay, the first approach is that of Rabbi Alex Israel. Okay, I brought Rabbi Alex Israel. I think this approach has a lot of merit to it. You have to understand what B'nai Israel at this time are going through is the following issue. It's this exact challenge. Which is, it's not that they are rejecting God entirely, it's that they are sort of doubling up. What does that mean? When Eliyahu Navi says to them, Amitai, until when are you going to be posech al shtei asifim? That means how many times are you going to kind of be, you know, doubling up? Right? What are you doing? The people, it's not that they're not davening to God per se anymore, it's that they're also hedging their bets with Baal. They're basically saying, you know what, we'll do both. Now you have to understand, it makes a lot of sense, right? Surrounding regions are praying to Baal, you're reliant on rainfall, so, you know, I might take my chances with both of them. And so, Eliyahu HaNavi, his main challenge with the people is not to get them to have any sense of recognition for God. His main challenge is to say, you can't be doing both. Like, polytheism, it's not, you know, maybe I could do two. It doesn't work that way. As Jews, it's monotheism, it's one. Polytheism is inherently immoral, and it's completely antithetical to who we are. So you can't be doing both. Until how long are you going to be doing this? That's later on in this very parak. So I try to argue that I think each of these figures represents different paradigms and the contrast between the two. But here's what Rabbi Israel says. What he argues that Ovadiahu is a microcosm for what B'nai Israel's predicament is at this exact moment. What do we mean? Is Ovadiahu not himself challenged by having to deal with two different masters, but having this dilemma of who do I really, right? He's balancing both at the same time. That's what Eliyahu HaNavi is critiquing. That's what there's this Lech Amor LaAdonecha, meaning there's not two, there's one, right? There's not, you have one. If you have two, it's not, you don't have two. There's only, meaning you're either rejecting God or accepting God. It doesn't work that. It doesn't work that you could have two at once. And so what Eliyahu HaNavi is trying to say to Ovadiahu, and what Ovadiahu represents is this model of what B'nai Israel is at this point, of having two masters. So he's saying, oh, Eliyahu, you're my master. No, I'm not your master. That's Achav is your master. So it's, again, this is the dilemma. This is the challenge B'nai Israel is in. Who are they going to follow? And Ovadiahu is that exact individual. Will he follow Achav or will he follow Eliyahu? And he's a paradigm, microcosm, for what B'nai Israel is going through. By the way, Rav Amnon Bazak says later on, parenthetically, that that's also what Achav is. That Achav has a challenge of Izebel and, you know, Eliyahu or Ovadiahu. So it's just interesting. So that's one approach, okay? He represents what B'nai Israel's predicament is at this moment. But I want to share with you two others. The second one comes from Mori V'Rabbi of Moshe Lichtenstein, and also Rav Amnon Bazak. Now, Rav Moshe Lichtenstein has a very, very, very long sefer on the Haftarot, but when you have, he doesn't write on all of Navi, but when you have a Haftorah, which he's written on, it's amazing. It's very helpful. But here, I want to highlight what they say, and it's a really profound point, and I'm going to quote a little bit from him directly, because if he hadn't said it, I wouldn't necessarily feel as comfortable saying it. But here's what I think they're pointing to something very critical. Which is that here, what's going on here is that they're representing two completely opposite paradigms of leadership. What do we mean? So what do you do in the face when you have a king that serves Avodah Zarah? So do you on the one hand say, I'm done with this, I'm separating myself, I can't have any part in it, and you make harsh decrees and you run away. I can't have any part in this. Or do you say, you know what, this is not ideal, I'm aware that there are real serious problems here, but you say I'll work from within. I'll see what change, what positive impact I can have from within, right? And so Eliyahu represents one extreme, that I'm going to completely break away. And the other approach is that, no, I'm going to try to see how I can navigate this, you know, sort of within, well, can I? And he does, right? Doesn't he help 100 prophets? And doesn't he sustain them? So yes, there's the negatives of being part of that kingdom and helping out that kingdom, but there's also the other side of it. And so here I think you have these two different models, right? You have one model who withdraws and says, I'm not a part of this, and has a strict midas hadin, whereas the other says, I'm going to be involved, and I'm going to try my best to influence from within. And here, Rav Moshe Lichtenstein expels this out much more at length. I'll just quote one part of it. And again, he says this is a dilemma that people throughout history have faced. And these two different models. What do you choose? You say, I'm going to, and all the time you say, am I going to break away, or am I going to stay a part of it and say, okay, it's not a good situation, but at least I can try to make it better. So here's what, I just want to quote one line of it from you. So he says, Ovadyahu stood before one of the toughest dilemmas for anyone serving in a position of communal leadership. The extent to which one should work together with violent and wicked men in order to limit the damage and thus bring benefit to the community. So should cooperation between the righteous and the wicked be seen as recognition of the legitimacy of evil and approval of their actions? So should a communal leader who does this be seen as a partner in evil and wickedness? Or do we say that the readiness to work together with a wicked regime shows street smarts and self-sacrifice that protect the community and reduce its suffering? And here's where he goes a step further. He says, should we view refusal to work in the framework of the ruling power as the appropriate preservation of the purity of one's morals and not submission to wickedness, or perhaps as shirking and running away from responsibility? And I'll conclude with this part of his. This is a classic dilemma, one that is familiar to us from the history of our people, beginning with the Israelite officers in Egypt, down to the Judenrats in Nazi-occupied Europe. And we should not be surprised to find that some judges lead it favorably and others unfavorably. It's a perpetual dilemma. What do you choose to do? And what here, what the Navi is telling us, is that there's these two different models. And in fact, the model of Ovadyahu, the one who sort of stays and works from within and tries to have a positive impact from within, that's the one that seems to get greater preference. Hayayarei et Hashem Me'od. He's the one greater than Avraham Avinu. And while Eliyahu HaNavi is running away and hiding on the side, he's actually dealing with the fact that Navim are being killed. Right? And he's the one caring and trying the best to actually have some impact on the people instead of running around and being on the side and killing them. And I think here, at the very least, you have these two models. And what Tanakh is so strikingly emphasizing is that you have these two different paradigms for leadership. And what do you choose to do? And you could have the Eliyahu approach or you could have the Avodyahu approach. And which one's better, which one's better? That's the dilemma, that's the challenge that's being set up right here. That's the second idea. The third idea is from my teacher, Dr. Yael Ziegler, who I had the privilege and gusto to study under. And Dr. Ziegler makes a point which I think is very compelling as well. And what she tries to argue is it's not so much setting up a clash between the two, but it's actually setting up an idea, the idea that it's trying to setting up, is that you actually, you know, you have one figure who represents compromise and the other represents absolute truth, right? Distancing versus involving. And what's the appropriate model of leadership? It's not actually a challenge between the two. What she says is that what it indicates, and the fact that Eliyahu HaNavi is going to be successful in some part later on, no, Ovadyahu could not do what Eliyahu HaNavi is about to do at Har Carmel. Let me tell you, he is not going to be able to do that. He doesn't. He's not going to be able to get the people to be screaming out Hashem Hu Elokim. He's not capable of that. You need that. And what she argues is that we need both. That for Jews, you can't just have one. That these are two different models of leaders and figures in the Neviim. What they're presenting is that you have people who are people of compromise and negotiating from within. And then you also need people who deal just with the world of idealism and intensity. So you need like Ovadyahu for the Chevra, but you need someone that, you need people who are just pure people of principle and truth. And so here we'll just read a little bit from source number 7, Dr. Yael Ziegler, and then we're going to conclude for the night. It says, "B'sofo shel inyan, nidme li, at the end of the day, it appears to me," she wrote this in one footnote in a book about Malachim. It quotes some article she wrote. It was impossible to find, so I just emailed her directly and she sent me the Word document of it. It says, "B'sofo shel inyan, at the end of the day, nidme li shekol dor zaku kein lo vajah v'hein le Eliyahu." Every generation needs these two different types of people. Ovadyahu shomer al hemshachiyut shel hachevra, the continuation of the chevra, he guards over it. But often a pragmatic leader, manhig kamo Ovadyahu, a leader like Ovadyahu, mavtiach shenamshich litkayim ba'olam shel bnei adam halakuyim v'hachasirim. Meaning Ovadyahu ensures that the people who are imperfect and the people that who have their limitations, that they can still continue. You need people to guide those people as well. You know, you need l'havdil, right? You need people to be doing, you know, kirov and working in situations, let's say, are not the most ideal and there are issues and there are sticky situations. right? And people, okay, you know, they're not going to be following everything, but what can I get them to improve on, and how can I make a situation better, let's say? And then you have people, right, who are just pure idealists, men of principle. Just, that's the only world, like the black and white. Now again, what she says is, Zekukim anu gam le'Eliyahu, we also need Eliyahu. Kedei l'shmar al-chazon sh'olam mushlam. Meaning, you can't just live in a world of compromise. You need a world of idealism, and we have goals, and we have vision. Shel chaver Torah, a pure people, v'ideali, that's idealistic. And Eliyahu guarantees, shenamshich l'chalom v'lishov v'tikun olam malchu shakai. Meaning, at the end of the day, Eliyahu Hanavi is the one who's presenting this vision and goal, but let's get back to a place where everyone's committed. And so you need both. And what this is teaching us is that there are these two different types of leaders that are interacting, and they're both important. And it's not necessarily a clash, it's actually that both are relevant and necessary. And that concept is going to be important for us when we get to the end of the Eliyahu HaNavi stories. But I think it explains very nicely each of these three approaches, whether it's because Ovadiyahu represents the challenge that people is facing, the two masters, or whether it's about this clash between two different styles of someone who says, I'm going to get involved, even though it's imperfect, or the person who runs away to the sidelines. And I'd argue, if that's the way you're reading it, then Eliyahu HaNavi actually gets painted in a far worse light than, as we just saw in the Psukim. He's getting jabbed at, you're hiding away while I'm dealing with, you know, actually supporting people. Or the third one that's presenting two complementary figures, one working from the inside and one the pure principled idealist. I think those are three very valuable lessons from the story. So B'zar Hashem, next week we'll do the most dramatic, one of the most dramatic stories in all of Tanakh, Har Carmel. But it's this smaller story, I think, is also extremely important in telling, and that's why Yirmiyahu keeps it in here. Shkoyach, everyone. Thank you. Thanks for the great comments.